May it please the Court, good morning. I'm Andrew Mishlove, and I appear on behalf of David Velez. We have raised but a single issue on appeal, and that is the mootness argument as to the remedies or the exhaustion of remedies requirement of the Prison Litigation Reform Act. The facts in this case the Court is familiar with, but our position is that prior to the expiration of the 14-day time limit, which is imposed by the administrative regulation incorporated in the Prison Litigation Reform Act in this case, Mr. Velez had already achieved, through his own unorthodox means, every potential remedy, and there simply were no others.
I gather from your briefs that he disclosed the abuse he was suffering in response to the disciplinary charge.
Correct.
Does the record tell us on what date he first made this disclosure, and specifically whether or not it occurred within 14 days? Of the August 15th assault.
There's a discrepancy in the record, Your Honor. The affidavits indicate that the disclosure was on August 16th. However, I noted a document that said August 21st. It was either one of those 2 days.
So it didn't occur within the 14 days.
He definitely disclosed the abuse within the 14 days. He simply did not file a formal complaint under the 310 procedure. Instead, he made these allegations within the context of a 303 disciplinary proceeding. In addition, on August 15th, the behavior was witnessed by a prisoner.
Did you argue in the district court that appealing through the prison disciplinary process was adequate as exhaustion as a matter of state law?
No, and I don't think that's true, Your Honor. I only believe that the 303 disciplinary proceeding is the exclusive proceeding to contest the disciplinary action, his being placed in segregation.
That's what worries me. If that doesn't count as exhaustion, if you're conceding that anyway, then the Supreme Court's rule, which is that you have to exhaust in the way and time and form required by state law, is your main problem here. Because it looks like your client decided on a program of self-help, and that may be, from his perspective, entirely efficacious. But if, given the Supreme Court's ruling that you have to comply with state law rather than make it up as you go along, that's the problem. So why should we deem self-help adequate?
I agree with the way the courts framed the question completely. The issue is, would that process mandated by state law provide any remedy whatsoever? The only thing that I think that's been proposed is in the nature of policy changes within the institution, and our position is those don't constitute remedies available to Mr. Velez. And while I agree that the court should not encourage the kind of self-help remedy Mr. Velez used, on the other hand, I think we'd have to agree it was ingenious and efficacious, and it certainly shouldn't be held against him, and it did, in fact, render everything else moot.
The question I'm asking, and this was actually, I think, the technical holding of the district court, is that one can't avoid complying with the state's requirements for exhaustion by making up a self-help remedy, declaring that you're satisfied with the results of the self-help remedy, and then saying, since I got what I wanted in my own way, I don't have to use your way.
I would agree with the court, except for one thing. He didn't declare himself satisfied. If there was any available remedy, if some remedy could be proposed that actually was a remedy that he hadn't already achieved, I would agree with the court.
Yeah, well, you see, that's my problem. It's the, I got what I wanted my own way, therefore I didn't have to use your way. And that's just saying people can bypass the state's remedies whenever they choose self-help as an alternative. That's the difficulty I have with your position.
And I guess perhaps what the district court is saying is that even if he got his own remedy or if it was moot, he should use the state remedy in the alternative or as a duplicate.
Yes.
And if the court's...
There's actually a holding of the Supreme Court on that question, not in the context of escape, not in the context of exhaustion, but in the context of escape. Somebody who claimed he was being beaten up by the guards, who chose to escape from prison as his remedy, and then said, I'm entitled to this because the alternative is being beaten up by the guards. And the Supreme Court said, no, you're not entitled to escape. Your obligation was to use the prison's internal complaint process. You're not entitled to take things into your own hands.
Your Honor, if that's what the court is going to hold, then I lose. But my position, and
I'm just describing the actual holding of United States against Bailey.
I agree that if the court views this alternative or duplicative process as mandatory, then my argument falls. But I don't think that's what the Prison Litigation Reform Act says when it uses the phrase such remedies as may be available, nor what this court meant in that language from Perez that I quote.
Did Officer Van Lanen independently report the assault he witnessed on August 15th, or did he remain quiet until prison officials began looking into Velez's defense?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I suspect it's the latter, that he did not immediately report it.
Did prison regulations require him to report any abuse he witnessed? Will the record tell us that? I mean, I assume they did.
I would have to assume yes, but that's not a matter of record.
It's not. Was Van Lanen ever disciplined? Is that in the record?
No, it's not in the record, but I do not believe he was. I believe he was a witness to the conduct and corroborated it later.
Thank you.
With that, Your Honors, I will reserve any remaining time.
Certainly, Mr. Mishlow. Mr. Ganser.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. I'm Assistant Attorney General Joe Ganser for the state of Wisconsin.
Mr. Ganser,
yes, sir.
Maybe you could tell from my question what my big worry here is, which is why shouldn't we view the protest after Velez got into disciplinary segregation as an adequate exhaustion of state remedies? He protested his segregation in the prescribed way, and he raised in that protest his objection to being assaulted by guards. And, of course, we know it was efficacious in the sense that the guards got sacked, prosecuted. Why isn't that an effective exhaustion of remedies? Maybe he shouldn't have got himself into segregation, but once he got there, he sent a written piece of paper to the prison higher-ups, which alerted them to the problem.
Yes, sir. I think to follow that premise, we would have to accept that the 303 disciplinary process and the 310 civil complaint process are somehow inextricably intertwined in this case, or it couldn't be separated. I think the bigger problem would be is if we're going to open that Pandora's box, that an inmate simply needs to pursue some path, even the wrong one, and that's good enough.
Well, one would think he has to pursue a prescribed path, and his protest about disciplinary segregation was a prescribed path. It certainly has to be efficacious. But suppose Wisconsin adopted a rule that said all complaints have to be on blue-tinted paper, and the prisoner submitted his complaint on ordinary white paper, or worse, yellow legal paper, right? But he brought the actual information to the attention of the prison. I take it you wouldn't be saying that the failure to use blue-tinted paper meant he had to lose his civil rights suit.
No, sir, and I think there are cases that talk about those hyper-technical issues or where an inmate doesn't use the proper language to describe his grievance, and courts have not held that against him and said, well, you were somewhat on notice. I think in this case, there's a huge difference between his problem with the segregation discipline and whatever remedies could flow from there, perhaps removing the restrictions, and his complaint about the assault of behavior and the remedies that would flow from that. As the district court pointed out, there could be policy changes or a prison transfer, additional security. And as the court pointed out back in the Perez case, the essential question is, how do you know until you try? We don't know what remedies would have been satisfactory to Velez until he made a proper complaint.
Right. No, I understand all of that. We said that in Perez. The Supreme Court said that in Booth and in Woodford and so on. It seems to me the hard question here, although made easier by Mr. Mishlove's concession, was that would be an argument that exhaustion was accomplished rather than an argument that exhaustion was excused.
Yes, sir. And I think the exhaustion, as the case law has pointed out, exhaustion is tied to the process, not the result. And I think certainly in this case, he not only did he not exhaust, and it was pointed out by the district court, he never even pursued. And I think when you look at the gap in time between the alleged assault of behavior and when the suit was filed, it's in a matter of years. I think that completely eviscerates any claim that, well, whatever remedies were there were no longer available to me. So I think, to follow your reasoning, there's just simply no way around having to file that initial administrative complaint to at least allow the prison to clean up the record, address the issue, identify whatever issues still remain, so that if it does resort to civil litigation, the court has a very clean record to work
from. But how might things have turned out differently? Excuse me. If Mr. Velez had filed a complaint in addition to disclosing the abuse and his defense to the disciplinary charge.
Well, we can certainly hypothesize, certainly from my perspective, had he followed that administrative procedure, the warden perhaps would have come to him and said, Mr. Velez, we are doing X, Y, and Z as a remedy. He perhaps would have said, that's all I really wanted, thank you very much, and we wouldn't be here. I think the purpose of the
act... Boy, you sure have an unusual idea of wardens in prisons.
Well, I think based on the record,
how about this scenario? He would have been beaten to a pulp.
If he would have followed the process.
Right.
I think the fact that he'd made an oral complaint that was immediately addressed by the warden, and I think we're talking a matter of 24 hours or so before corrective action began
but
to be
taken. But isn't he in solitary by then?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
But I think it does go to the point, Your Honor, that the whole reason the act exists is to give the wardens a chance to take these proper remedial measures so things don't get worse.
Well, what about Officer Van Lane? And if he was a witness to the August 15th assault, then wasn't the prison already on notice of the harassment and other abuse through him?
Correct, Your Honor. But
and whereas the briefs, you know, don't tell us what exactly the abuse is, the Internet does.
Yes, ma'am.
So, I mean, it's pretty, you know, sickening stuff.
It's, and he's certainly a sympathetic plaintiff. I'll grant him that. But I think you said two key words, on notice. And I think that's the difference between an oral report to a guard or something other than that. If it's going to be quite dangerous if we start holding that a prison is on notice through a whole series of measures apart from the written 310 program in Wisconsin.
Yeah, but of course that's what prompted the question the way I asked it, which was, why doesn't one say in a case like this that exhaustion was accomplished by what Velez himself filed with the warden? Right? Even though one can't take a line that says exhaustion is excused, if the prison should have known something or knew something, then the prisoner doesn't have to do anything. Here the prisoner actually wrote out his complaint, sent it to the higher-ups, gave them notice, and they reacted. So he gave them an opportunity that was adequate for them to act, because we know they did act.
They did, I guess, in going back to the point I made before about...
See, different way of putting it, what more would have happened had he put a different statutory subsection or different code subsection on the document?
I think there was more to his defect than simply that, number one. Number two, I think when we're talking about not just what more would have happened, but what would have happened that satisfied Velez and prevented litigation in the first place. And the answer is we simply do not know. I think looking at the cases that all came after the prison booth and all the way up through Woodford, I think they made clear that we're not going to speculate, engage in this degree of speculation. We need to follow the administrative procedures regardless. Is essentially what we're talking about. And I think we're the danger here is giving relief to Velez that could simply open the floodgates to, I told a guard even though I didn't write it out, or I wrote it and sent it to the wrong body, the wrong entity. And I think that's the risk we run if we grant him relief.
Does the record tell us if Mr. Velez is still in prison?
I do not believe it does. I think counsel and I were speaking beforehand. I would defer to him, but I believe he may or may not be still in custody. Okay. It's not certain.
That's a perfect answer.
Right. I believe he may or may not be in custody, live, in Wisconsin, or a Martian.
Based on one of these things. Based on my conversation with counsel, he may in fact be out or soon will be out. But I can't attest to that.
Well, now I'm getting worried on other fronts. Since the Prison Litigation Reform Act applies only to prisoners, if the man is out, what role does the exhaustion requirement play?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I suppose...
That was really mine.
Understood.
Okay. Compliment me, too.
It's a great question, Judge. I would contend that it would...
It's well known that Judge Rovner and I are really the same person.
That's right. That was established earlier. You may
right.
not have been here.
Earlier in the day.
I guess I would contend, Your Honor, that if he was in custody when the tort occurred, that he would be bound by those particular requirements at that time. I guess I would have to consider whether
he's out.
I guess if you're out, you could look back. I'm frankly not sure. I guess at this point we would have to consider whether Mr. Velez could simply lose this lawsuit, wait until he gets out and refile. I don't know whether he could.
Well, that would depend on the statute of limitations. Mm-hmm. But the statute of limitations for 1983 actions in Wisconsin is, if I recall correctly, 6 years.
Yes, sir.
So he would have plenty of time to try again.
Very good. Yes, sir, he would.
I think. Maybe, well, we'll ask Mr. Mishlove when he comes back.
Poor Mr. Mishlove.
Thank you.
Mr. Mishlove, please come back.
He has nothing further to add.
Taking notes.
Is he in, out, or Martian?
I understand that at this time he is incarcerated. He was transferred to a different institution shortly after this, but he's due to be released within the next few weeks.
Well... Then you could probably file a new suit within, well, dare I say it, the next few weeks.
Yes. I'd like to address a couple issues raised by counsel, and I really don't want to file a new suit. I think we can deal with this here.
You may find you're better off without this particular albatross.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Mm-hmm. I think that the statement that we don't know what remedies might have accrued from a 310 process is inadequate from the part of the state of Wisconsin. I have simply asked the state and in fact sort of challenged the district court to propose something that Mr. Velez could have sought, whether it was something he wanted or not, that would have fit within the definition of remedy. And the closest thing I've heard so far is either some sort of policy change, like a sign on the wall, guards shall not assault inmates, or a hypothetical X, Y, or Z. And I submit to the court that none of this really are remedies. The remedies that were available to him, he received through this alternate 303 process. The question is, did he have to duplicate that process?
So getting back to the point that Judge Easterbrook and Judge Rovner made, and the fact that he is being released shortly, and
right.
if you filed a new lawsuit that would be nice and clean and tidy, you know, is this something you might want to discuss with your client in terms of proceeding with this case?
That's very I think so, yeah.
And, let,
what
us
you're talking
and
about.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Like right then, 10 days.
I can do 10 days.
Yeah.
We'll give you the opportunity to let us know.
All right. Thank you, then.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.